Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We were just getting into the backstory of Madison's veto of the bonus bill. And I was beginning to tell you how he was the one that kind of told Congress that this is what America needed. However, they didn't listen to him, and they just said, well, we'll just do this on our own. Basically trying to go down this path of saying, you know, President, we think that we can just go ahead and do this. And Madison saw it differently, which is why he vetoed them, which is one of the reasons why Congress basically blackballed James Madison, the father of the Constitution. Now, you would think Thomas Jefferson, the father of the Declaration of Independence, George Washington, the father of this nation, Abraham Lincoln, what did he do? Okay, so he freed the slaves, yes. And look at the size of the monument that he did. However, James Madison, who actually gave us the Constitution that would force the issue of freeing slaves, as I've talked about this before, look at what he gave us and look at how it stands today. There was no doubt he was recognized. Here's a guy that when he ran for president in his first term, he didn't even campaign. He was the first and probably the only president to not campaign or spend a penny. If he spent any money, it was really negligible. But the bottom line is, he didn't make any efforts. He knew he had whatever in the bag. He knew he had it in the bag. And so going two terms and then stepping down was pretty much just like backstroking for him. Now, there were lots of things within his presidency that he, you know, would do and rescind, like he did when he called for the nation for humility and prayer. He felt that that might be, you know, construed. Now, he was just hypersensitive because George Washington had no reservations about doing it, nor did James Madison tell Washington what he was doing was unconstitutional. But anyway, and there were actual calls to prayer and fasting that James Madison submitted that he didn't recall. So it's kind of interesting, you know, how he was over analytical. You know, it's kind of like in the Marine Corps. You have ground officers and you have air officers. Air officers, you know, have to, you know, look at things and they have to make judgments. And so they're taught to, you know, kind of go through this, you know, before they make a judgment. And ground officers are taught, take the objective. You know, that's it, because what's in front of me? And so the interesting thing is that I've learned is when you go to officers that, you know, when I was in the Marine Corps, when you go to an officer, if he was a ground officer, he'd give you a decision almost immediately. You go to an air officer and you might risk not ever getting a decision because he will be paralyzed by analysis, paralysis by analysis. Anyway, so let me get through the obligatories and then let me get into this story of James Madison, the backstory that a lot of people don't know because I don't say it all the time and I don't go into the details. So this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, not only ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. You are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. Don't forget, every Tuesday, I am on Rumble at 2 o'clock on Tyranny, Not Freedom. Or Freedom, Not Tyranny. I'm sorry. Freedom, Not Tyranny. Look them up. And they actually have me live on Tuesday, so you can either call or you probably email or what have you via Facebook or on Rumble. You can ask your questions. We're going through the petitions right now, and we just went through the petition to recall Congress, to remove all of Congress for violating their oath of office and not following the Constitution as directed. Anyway, If you're looking for free Constitution classes just to get started, don't go to Hillsdale College. Don't go to a lot of these places that will not give you the unvarnished truth, the things you need to know about the Constitution. Try out constitutioneducation.us. If you're looking for quality hardwood furniture, something that you can create as your legacy, an heirloom that you can pass down to generations, because when it's hardwood, it'll last forever, especially if you take care of it and it's well built, go to timbernation.com. Now, if you need things to protect your equipment, you protect your computers, then go to radiodustcovers.com. Now, I have another, I have another endorsement for you that's coming. If you have never taken the time to truly plan out your finances, if you don't have a couple of months saved salary in savings, it's called your emergency fund that you never touch. That's why it's called the emergency fund. Then you need to have a conversation with Gary Smith, who has this Ramsey Coaches and so forth. And I will be able to give you the details of this. We're just going through, you know, I'm learning because I know Gary. I know Gary is a great guy. He's a patriot. And I know that he cares and he wants to give back. I know that it's a service he's providing, but I don't know what his pricing is, but I don't think he is out to try to line his pockets with gold. I think he's just basically trying to fill in his retirement with something he can do and how he can help people. So anyway, I'll be presenting that hopefully by next week. Just letting you know, I've got another endorsement out there. Again, all of these endorsements are non-paid. So I either believe in these people and what they do, or I just don't have any time to I don't have any content to provide you, which is a fallacy. I've got plenty of content to go through. Anyway, comment line 425-270-5416. Many times I get people to actually contact me, but what we're covering are the three presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. Now, when we left off, I was telling you this story regarding James Madison and him retiring. See, he didn't go over to Congress and say, hey, we got to do this. It's one last thing one last mark I'd like to make on the nation before I fully retire. And as a matter of fact, I will tell you that he continued serving and trying to provide insights and corrections for many of the people. When people wanted to know, hey, can you release your notes on the Constitutional Convention so we can understand the Constitution better? He told them to go to the ratification debates. We're going to actually get to that letter. But it's interesting how he had no design or desire to aggrandize or to create some, enterprise off of his notes and the things that he has done. He wasn't in it for the money. Okay, so Madison was getting ready to retire, and I believe James Monroe had already been elected in 1816 was when he was elected. Now, in these days, way back then, they didn't actually do the inauguration and the changing of power until March. So there was several months from the election to the time when there was, the retirement of the president and the new president took office. And so the Congress came over and they said, hey, President Madison, James, buddy, what can we do? And this is kind of where we left off. And James Madison sat down and he started talking about the principles and ideas that were in the Wealth of Nations, because Adam Smith actually talked about America, and he talked about America as an economic power. And in the Wealth of Nations book, he basically said, if America can create the highways and waterways so hardy, so well-designed, that they can really efficiently move their commerce from the inland to the waterways to overseas and back, that they would become the most powerful nation just due to the way we have this economic agreement of, you know, equal trade amongst each other, and then that the federal government will regulate the trade going out and regulate the trade coming back to make sure that we're not selling ourselves downriver. And this is one of the reasons why we did really well. Now, it is antithetical for the United States government or for the federal government, the general government, to actually try to get away with, you know, shutting down good parts of our economy like timber and so forth to benefit another nation. They shouldn't, and nor do they have the power to cause that kind of harm to the industries in America. But that's exactly what Biden, that's exactly what Bush, or not just Bush, that's exactly what Bush, Obama, Clinton, Biden, the globalists have been doing for years. And so this is why we have been shifted towards a services company or country, I should say. Anyway, so Madison tells these congressmen that are his friends in his office, they basically says, we need to be able to improve our highways and waterways. And the only way we can do this is by an amendment. And so they leave and they take off and they come back with this thing called the infrastructure bill. And actually, we'll read the title when we get into it. But this is when Madison actually vetoes it. And this is why they create the Madison Memorial that they did. I'll tell you about that memorial, and then we'll read his veto message. We'll be right back after this. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so anyway, they actually originate the bill. It gets passed by the House and then the Senate. Now see, to amend the Constitution, it requires 2/3 of both houses, and then it requires 3/4 of the states. They didn't believe that the states would probably amend the Constitution, or they felt they didn't need to. They looked at the Constitution and said, hey, we see the powers right here, these post roads and so forth. We should be able to do this. Yeah, let's do this. And so they created a bill that would have been basically, and this had it been signed, the federal government would have been able to create the footings for an executive department, all unconstitutionally. But they would have started creating this power, building upon it. And who knows, before the Department of the Interior, Department of Home in 1849, they probably would have created the Department of Transportation first. But you had President Madison, who vetoes this bill, and then he says this. And again, by the way, this is the very last act he does officially as the President of the United States, March 3rd, the same day that James Monroe is inaugurated and brought in and Madison is relieved. So I'm telling you, this was truly his last act and message to Congress that you have to abide by the Constitution. March 3rd, 1817, veto of federal public works bill. To the House of Representatives of the United States, having considered the bill this day presented to me entitled, quote, and this is the title of it, quote, an act to set apart and pledge certain funds for internal improvements, close quote, and which sets apart and pledges funds, quote, for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states, and to render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense. So in other words, they started making these, they brought these ties to it. Like, you know, by making these improvements in the waterway, they're going to be able to improve the common defense of the nation, so forth and so on. This is Madison now not quoting the document. He says, I am constrained by the insuperable difficulty I feel in reconciling the bill with the Constitution of the United States. To return it with that objection to the House of Representatives in which it originated. The legislative powers vested in Congress are specified and enumerated in the 8th section of the first article of the Constitution, and it does not appear that the power proposed to be exercised by the bill is among the enumerated powers. So clearly he calls them out and says, hey, what you're asking for is not within the enumerated powers, or it fails by any just interpretation with the power to make laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution those powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States. Now, you'd think he had it all done there. He, wow, boom, and then sign it and send it off. But no, he's not done. Because right here is where he mentions the necessary and proper clause in what I just read. In this next one, he talks about the power to regulate commerce. And it starts off as such, quote, the power to regulate commerce among the several states, close quote, cannot include a power to construct roads and canals and to improve the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and secure such commerce without a latitude of construction departing from the original import of the terms, strengthened by the known inconveniences which doubtless led to the grant of this remedial power to Congress. In other words, hey, we don't have this power. The states never gave it to us, which is why we don't have anything but remedial powers, the basic bare necessities. To refer to the power in question to the clause, quote, to provide for common defense and general welfare, close quote, would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation as rendering the special and careful enumeration powers which follow that clause. Now, he's talking about the preamble where, and let me get to it, you know, because I think it's important that we actually give you the insight. So he's talking about the General Defense and Welfare Clause, which is the preamble to Article 1, Section 8. And it says this, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, imposts, and exercises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excise taxes shall be uniform throughout the United States. So he now cites to provide for common defense and general welfare would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation as rendering the special and careful enumerated powers of which follow that clause nugatory and improper. such as a view of the Constitution would have the effect of giving Congress a general power of legislation instead of the defined, limited one hitherto understood to belong to them. The terms common defense and general welfare, embracing every object and act within the purview of legislative trust, it would have the effect of subjecting both the Constitution and the laws of the several states in all cases not specifically exempted to be superseded by the laws of Congress, it being expressly declared, quote, that the Constitution of the United States and laws made in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land of every state, shall be bound thereby. Anything to the Constitution or laws or states to the contrary notwithstanding. I'm going to pause right here. So what he's done, he has now covered all four mystical clauses. He put all of them on the table in this document so far. He started off with the power to make laws necessary and proper, and then he went into the powers to regulate commerce among the several states. And then he went in to provide for common defense and general welfare, the preamble. And then he just covered the supremacy clause. In other words, none of these four clauses granted the general government any portal to be able to create new powers, that they were hard limited to the enumerated powers, and that these four clauses only refer to the enumerated powers, not a portal to create a new power. Such a view of the Constitution, this is Madison again, after him saying, anything in the Constitution or laws of the states to the contrary notwithstanding, such a view of the Constitution, finally, would have the effect of excluding the judicial authority of the United States from its participation in guarding the boundary between the legislatures of the general and the state governments, inasmuch as questions relating to the general welfare, being questions of policy and expediency, are unsusceptible of judicial cognizance and decision. A restriction of the power, quote, to provide for the common defense and general welfare, close quote, to cases which are to be provided for the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great and most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution. If a general power to construct roads, canals, and to improve the navigation of watercourses with the train of powers incident thereto be not possessed by Congress, the assent of the states in the mode provided in the bill cannot confer the power. In other words, hey, if the state said, yeah, go ahead. If you sent them out, you know, hey, are you okay? And they all send back and respond, yeah, this sounds great, do it. Even as he says, the cession of a particular state can extend the power, or the only cases in which the consent and cession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution. What he's talking about is the Article 5 process. In other words, they cannot, and actually I jumped. So what I meant to say is the expenditure of money would still leave within the state legislatures the power of Congress all of the great, most important measures of government, money being the ordinary means of carrying them into execution. If a general power to construct roads and canals and improve navigation watercourses with the train of powers incident thereto be not possessed by Congress, the assent, the approval of the states in the mode provided in the bill cannot confer the power. So in other words, they may have a bill there that's going to notify the states to please acknowledge that we're going to be doing this or something like that. It doesn't matter. The only way the states can actually provide that power legitimately is through the Article 5 process, which is what he basically says, are those specified and provided for in the Constitution. Okay, got that right. Got that correct now. I am not unaware, Now, listen to what he says here, because he wanted to do this. I am not unaware of the great importance of roads and canals and the improved navigation of water courses, and that a power in the national legislature to provide for them might be exercised. Well, we're going to read this last paragraph when we come back, because I don't want to just end it right there. Because this is where Madison basically said, man, I am absolutely for this. I think that this is what we need to do. But I can't sign it. You have to get an amendment. But he doesn't actually say it like that. But he basically just goes and says, you need to follow the process that we've been doing. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so now we get into the final reconciliation of what Madison is doing. I am not unaware of the great importance of roads and canals and the improved navigation of water courses, and that a power in the national legislature to provide for them might be exercised with signal advantage to the general prosperity. But seeing that the power is not expressly given by the Constitution, and believing that it cannot be deduced from any part of it without an admissible latitude of construction and reliance on insufficient precedents, believing also that the permanent success of the Constitution depends on a definite partition of powers between the general and the state governments, and that no adequate landmarks would be left by the constructive extension of the powers of Congress as proposed in the bill, I have no option but to withhold my signature from it, and to cherish the hope that its beneficial objects may be obtained by a resort for the necessary powers to the same wisdom and virtue in the nation which established the Constitution. In its actual form and providently marked out in the instrument itself a safe and practicable mode of improving it as experience might suggest. So he's basically pointing to the Constitution to amend it. My friends, it's clear that when he talks about, you know, that there's nothing in here. And as a matter of fact, you know, the fact of, you know, these bills and these powers have violated the definite partition of powers between the general and state governments. Every time the general government creates a new power that they don't have, well, then what it has done is it has basically violated that partition of powers between the general government and the state governments. Whether you like it or not, good or bad, they should not be doing these things unless they have the legal and formal authorization from their master, from the parents of this republic. The parents of this republic are the states. We are the parties to the compact. The federal government is the servant of the contract. They're to serve us, not the other way around. Now, the thing I like about James Monroe is that he's a little easier to read. He doesn't necessarily get so lofty where Madison kind of goes into some words and so forth. I think this is a lot easier to read. But you got to understand that he was the Secretary of State under James Madison. And so he was very familiar with this bill, actually coming into the presidency, and this basically Madison facing this the day they switched hands. He was pretty well aware of this. And as a matter of fact, so Congress waited not for him to actually do this in his first term, because his reelection was in 1820, right? He was elected in 1816, and he did his inauguration in 1817 when Madison wrote that. So in 1820, he was re-inaugurated in 1821. And so here it is, May 4th, 1822. Shoot, he's got 2 years plus, a little over 2 years left as president. And him actually seeing the advantages of, you know, being able to improve the highways and waterways, to improve the flow of commerce, by doing so, the government would make more money quicker. Because as you improve the flow of commerce, you improve your flow of revenue. So anyway, they understood that this would be a big benefit for government, that they would actually improve their revenue. So this is what James Monroe, the other James, and he says, having duly considered the bill entitled, quote, an act for the preservation and repair of the Cumberland Road, close quote, it is with deep regret, approving as I do the policy, that I am compelled to object to its passage and to return the bill to the House of Representatives, in which it originated, under a conviction that Congress do not possess the power under the Constitution to pass such a law. You know what? That's all he really needed to say. But believe it or not, he's got two full pages practically of words that he continues to tell them. Now, let's think about this. This is a bill that's going to improve one very particular road, the Cumberland Gap. Let me also point out to you this concept of uniformity. If the federal government is improving one road, they should be improving all of the roads, because they can't be providing an advantage to a very specific set of states where the other states could be wanting for improvements as well, whether it be canals, waterways, watercourses, or even roadways. It doesn't matter. They can't be providing favoritism as well. Anyway, a power to establish turnpikes with gates and tolls, and to enforce the collection of tolls by penalties, implies a power to adopt and execute a complete system of internal improvement, a right to impose duties to be paid by all persons passing a certain road, and on horses and carriages, as is done by the bill, involves the right to take the land from the proprietor on a valuation and to pass laws for the protection of the road from injuries, and if it exists as to one road, it exists to any other, and to as many roads as Congress may think proper to establish. A right to legislate for one of these purposes is a right to legislate for the other. It is a complete right of jurisdiction and sovereignty for all the purposes of international or internal improvement, and not merely the right of applying money under the power vested in Congress to make appropriations which, under power with the consent of the states through which road passes, the work was originally commenced and has been so far executed. I am of opinion that Congress do not possess this power, that the states individually cannot grant it, for although they may assent to the appropriation of money within their limits for such purposes, they can grant no power of jurisdiction or sovereignty by special compacts with the states. This power can be granted only by an amendment to the Constitution and in the mode prescribed by it. If the power exists, it must be either because it has been specifically granted to the United States or that it is incidental to some power which has been specifically granted. Now, I'll give you an example. That when the federal government started taking up the management as of 1808, immigration, because immigration was managed by the states for the first 20 years. And when they started doing this and they started managing it, then they had the ability, an incidental power, to basically create passports for citizens to go abroad so that when they came back, they would have the identification necessary to be able to come back into the country. And that passport would be used as a U.S. citizen as they traveled abroad, that if they committed certain crimes like, you know, piracy on the high seas or crimes on the high seas and or crimes committed against the laws of nations while they're abroad, the United States, clearly the Constitution, claims jurisdiction over them. So there was things that they had incidental that they could do under this power of immigration and the naturalization of people. Okay, so if it doesn't exist, if the ways of maintaining and improving the highways and that flow, which doesn't exist, there is no power incidental. When people say post roads, and one of the things that's going to come up to here is he's going to be hit with the post roads. He doesn't go into the details of what a post road is. Only my listeners understand a post road. I spoke to a constitutional attorney and asked him, do you know what a post road is? And he goes, well, yeah, it's a road that the Postal Service uses. And I go, no. A post road is a road that is connecting the state capital to the national seat of government, to Washington, D.C. That's a post road. It takes you from one post to the next post, and that's it. Now, because we have a large republic, we have this network. That's why we have these highways that kind of go back east, but they've created a lot of unnecessary and unconstitutional tributaries, because when I-90 keeps on moving towards New York and it only connects to, so once it connects to a highway that goes to D.C., that's done. The post road does not extend to all of these other origins and destinations. It's kind of like I-95. Is it I-95? Or, yeah, I think it's 95. It's the one that goes north and west on the eastern seaboard that takes you from the main capital all the way down to D.C. and all the way down to Florida. So that highway actually is a post road that connects all these different states. That's why that post road goes through the state capitals of every state. You starting to get it? There you go. Anyway, with that, we will be back. And there's, I think when you get up north, they have to divide off. But anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so if you look at the Eastern Seaboard's maps, you can kind of see how, you know, they go all over the place, but the web work kind of works its way down. When you start seeing some of these roads that are kind of meandering down there, and that some, you know, they're going in different directions as well, then you can probably guess that there was probably federal dollars on some of those freeway systems that were not actually supporting the post road requirement. But that is the whole purpose of the post roads, okay? And so as we go forward in this veto, let me kind of move up to where we left off. And so, as he says, that this power can be granted only by an amendment to the Constitution and in the mode prescribed by it. Now he moves on and says, if the power exists, it must be either because it has been specifically granted to the United States or that it is incidental to some power which has been specifically granted. If we examine the specific grants of power, we do not find it among them, nor is it incidental to any power which has been specifically granted. It has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. It is claimed by Congress. Congress is claiming only as being incidental to some one or many of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. In other words, they provided their justification out of these different powers. First, from the right to establish post offices and post roads. Now, I already told you what a post road was. It had nothing to do with the post office roads. Second, from the right to declare war. Third, to regulate commerce. Fourth, to pay the debts and to provide for the common defense and general welfare. Fifth, from the power to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution all the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or office thereof. Sixth and lastly, from the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and other property of the United States. Interesting, right? Wow, that's a new one. This concept of territories. These are states. These are sovereign. And as Madison, or as Monroe clearly states, according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers nor from all of them united, and in consequence, it does not exist. Having stated my objection to the bill, I should now cheerfully communicate at large the reason on which they are founded if I had time to reduce them to such form as to include them in this paper. The advanced stage of the session renders that impossible. Having at the commencement of my service at this high trust considered it a duty to express the opinion that the United States does not possess the power in question, and to suggest for the consideration of Congress the propriety of recommending to the states an amendment to the Constitution to vest the power in the United States. My attention has often drawn to the subject since, in consequence whereof I have occasionally committed my sentiments to paper respecting it. The form which this exposition has assumed is not such as I should have given it had it been intended for Congress, nor is it concluded. Neither, as it contains in my views on this subject, being one which I deem very high importance, in which many of its bearings has now come has become particularly urgent. I will communicate it with Congress if in my power, in the course of the day, or certainly on Monday next. So, in other words, he says, I don't have time to do all of this along with the, you know, because the session is coming to an end. He's got a lot of other work to do. So he basically wants to communicate separately, you know, to talk to them about doing this and amending the Constitution. You had two presidents in a row, James Madison, who wanted this done, as well as James Monroe. James Madison and James Monroe, the two in a row. And there you go. Why didn't Congress listen to either of them and just go through the process? Now, I want you to think about this. They had the support of James Madison and James Monroe, and these guys could have easily championed this to the states and sold this, but Congress didn't want to go down that path. And I believe there's divine providence in that, because I believe had they amended the Constitution to grant the federal government to create these highways, waterways, and everything else, and these internal improvements, this would have begun the beginning of, you know, aggrandizing more and more powers in the federal government, that, you know, we would have started just caving to them, or because this power existed, then other incidental powers would be garnered from this power. So I believe it was the divine hand of providence that did not actually give the federal government this power. The federal government has violated the Constitution over the past two centuries in meddling and playing with railroads, highways, waterways, and so forth, even after these two veto statements. So with that, let me grab the next veto statement, which is Jackson. Now, Jackson was the first president, okay? So it was 1822 when Congress got slapped down again. Andrew Jackson was confronted by Congress in May of 1830, and his veto message was signed the 27th of May, 1830. And this is his veto message. And what I'll probably do is I'll probably jump between paragraphs. So the first paragraph, gentlemen, I have maturely considered the bill proposing to authorize a subscription of stock in the Maysville, Washington, Paris, and Lexington Turnpike Road Company, and now return the same to the House of Representatives in which it originated with my objection to its passage. So instead of creating a highway improvement system, what they actually did was a subscription of stock in the Maysville, Washington, Paris, and Lexington Turnpike Road Company. How bold. for Congress to actually go out and say, we're going to get a subscription of stock. We're going to basically become a part owner and probably eventually own this company. And we're going to do these things this way. Now, he goes on and says, sincerely friendly to the improvement of our country by means of roads and canals, I regret that any difference of opinion in the mode of contributing to it should exist between us. And if in stating this difference I go beyond what the occasion may be deemed to call for, I hope to find an apology in the great importance of the subject, an unfeigned respect for the high source of which this branch of it has emanated, and an anxious wish to be correctly understood by my constituents in the discharge of my duties. Now, we're going to kind of go down to what we call paragraph 4. Just kind of skip out of paragraph 2, skip paragraph 3, and now we're in paragraph 4. And I want to just read this highlight here. Every member of the Union in peace and war will be benefited by the improvement of inland navigation and the construction of highways in the several states. Let us then endeavor to attain this benefit in a mode which will be satisfactory to all. Okay, now we're going to skip down to 6, because these are just the highlights. Because this is a 9-page veto message, where Monroe's and Madison's were really like one page. So, to avoid these evils, it appears to me that the most safe, just, and federal disposition which could be made of the surplus revenue, which be its apportionment among the several states according to the ratio of representation, and should this measure not be found warranted by the Constitution, that it would be expedient to propose to the states an amendment authorizing it. The constitutional power of the federal government to construct or promote works of internal improvements presents itself in 2 points of view. The first, as bearing upon the sovereignty of the states within whose limits their execution is contemplated. If jurisdiction of the territory which they occupy to be claimed as necessary to their prevention and use, the second as asserting the simple right to appropriate money from the national treasury in aid of such works when undertaken by state authority, surrendering the claim of jurisdiction. Now, I think what I'm going to do is pause here. I just want you to know, as we've gone through these things and what we covered yesterday, this federal government infrastructure bill, here we've had now 3 presidents begin to lecture us that the power doesn't exist in the Constitution, that the only way that they can be doing this and spending that trillions of dollars is by getting an amendment. So I once again ask you to please call the senator in Arizona, the Democratic senator in Arizona, and the Democratic senator in West Virginia that have been a bane to Biden in not supporting the progressive agenda. And they are the 2 holdouts. You got to thank them for what they're doing and plead that they continue to do it with this bill. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way, we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.